The following message is brought to you by Terry Moore. And now, Mr. Moore.
There was a man who grew up in the city, spent nearly his entire life there, but he had some relatives that lived in the countryside, and he wanted to visit his relatives and see what life was like on a farm. And so he traveled out to the country, and he was doing some work alongside the farmer there. And he watched in amazement as the farmer whistled to his dog. The dog sprang into action, herded up the sheep, rounded them into the corral there, and then went over and with his paw set the latch so that the sheep could not get out of the corral. The man was amazed at this, and he asked the farmer, "What is that dog's name?" The farmer looked at him kind of with a blank stare and then asked, "What's that flower that smells really good and it's red and it has thorns on its stem?" "A rose," the man replied. So the farmer looked toward his wife and said, "Rose, what do we call this dog?" It's kind of funny, but it has much to do with the message today. You know, it's estimated that the human brain has approximately 1 billion neurons. And that might seem like a lot, but each neuron forms approximately 1,000 connections to other neurons in our brain, amounting to more than a trillion neurological connections. Now, these connections are believed to have a direct influence on our ability to remember. If each neuron could only store a single memory on its own, we might run out of storage space rather quickly. You might only have, it's estimated, a few gigabytes worth of memory in your mind. Yet neurons combine so that all of them help one another, and they all help with different memories, associating different memories together. And this greatly multiplies the ability we have, the capacity, I should say, we have to remember. It increases the brain's memory storage to an estimated 2.5 petabytes, which is about a million gigabytes. That is a lot of information. Now, to help us understand how much information that is, if your brain were to work like a DVR, which stands for digital video recorder, we would have enough capacity in our minds to hold 3 million hours of video. And to help you kind of understand how much time that actually is, if you wanted to record 300 million hours of video, you could set a DVR to a television station and press record and let it play continuously day and night for 300 years. That is a lot of storage space. Still, even with this amazing innate ability that you and I have to remember, we often find it hard to recall certain things, don't we? We all have the ability to forget things, and it seems like we do this on a regular basis, don't we? I see a lot of you looking at me with kind of a blank stare, and that's my point. It should be well taken, right? We do. As a child, we forget things as we learn so many things. The child's brain is like a sponge. It's absorbing so many things that it learns. But children need constant reminders about these things because we forget them, don't we? As a teenager and as a young adult, there's even more that we need to remember. We tend to gain further responsibility in life, and we tend to forget, oh, I need to do the laundry. I need to put away my dishes. I need to take out the trash. These things kind of are out of sight, out of mind sometimes. In middle age, I mean, we're probably well secured in a job. We've learned a great many things through life, but we still tend to forget things, don't we? Things that we think we should remember this, but we can't recall everything all of the time. And then, of course, as we get older, many times, most of us, as we get older, our brains begin to lose a little bit of its power, if you will, and we become a little more forgetful at times. We all forget at times, no matter what age we are in life. And sometimes the forgetfulness we have is intentional, because there are some things we would like to forget. Sometimes it is not. There are things, it seems even, that we would like to forget, but we seem to remember those things. But the things we would like to remember, we seem to forget those things. It's ironic, isn't it? Could it be that sometimes we, you know, want to be independent from other people, and we might forget something that was done on our behalf to our benefit, to help us out in a situation where we struggled, and maybe we want to be a self-starter, a self-made man? We don't want to remember, though, the help that we got along the way, because we have an image of ourselves in our minds of ourselves, of what we think we should be like, and that's very important to us. But then we tend to forget those things that are equally important, how we got there, what makes us what we are, who we have to thank for those things. So with this in mind, I ask us a question today. Are we forgetting something? Are we forgetting something? Could it be that we find ourselves failing to consider some of the most important things in our lives that are directly related to God? I mean, I'm not talking about an entire removal of God from our memory where we erase him, we don't want him to be a part of our lives, but perhaps inconsistently consistently not recognizing him as a part of our lives, as a guiding light in our lives, a vital part of our day-to-day living. Let's open your Bible to Malachi, the book of Malachi, and chapter 4. Malachi 4. Being the one who designed the universe, the earth, everything in it, including our brains, God was well aware of this propensity from the very beginning. I don't think God designed us to be forgetful, but he knew that there would be many distractions in our lives, in a world that is filled with wonders of so many things to do, than all the creative abilities that you and I have, including those things that we design that are forbidden, that we should not partake of. God understood that we would have a tendency to not bring things to mind that we should, to forget, if you will, those things that we should definitely remember every day. And for this reason, God tells his people again and again to remember. Remember. Remember the former things of old, he says. Remember Abraham. Remember Isaac, Jacob. Remember Joseph and the faithful behavior that these individuals had. Remember my covenant, he told the people of Israel. Remember my commandments, he tells us today. Remember what he did for his people in the past and what he is doing and will do for his people in the future. God said to remember the eternal your God, for there is no other, saying that his counsel shall stand. In other words, his advice shall always be helpful each and every day, forever. Remember those things. Now, the book of Malachi speaks directly to, well, the world, but also particularly to the church of God, and it speaks of the end of the age on several occasions. In chapter 3, it talks about the coming of Christ, and then it also talks about his second coming. It talks about the end of the age, just before Christ's return. And in chapter 4, it goes on to talk about some of the things that you and I need to remember. Chapter 4 and verse 4 says, "Remember the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded him in Horeb for all Israel with the statutes and judgments." And he goes on to say, "Behold, I'll send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the eternal." And this, we believe, this is going to be one of the two witnesses, not an individual that has appeared on the world scene yet, even though Mr. Armstrong, he did an Elijah-type work. We do not believe he was the Elijah to come. In any case, I digress a bit. But God says to remember the law of Moses, not that this was a law Moses designed, but the law that he gave to the people through Moses, which he says, "I commanded him for Israel and for all people," not Israel alone, but for all people, with the statutes and the judgments. Now, the word remember means to bring to mind. It doesn't mean something that we just have on file and then we pull up on occasion when we need it, only when necessary, kind of like our times tables. you know, when we were children, we learned our times tables, and we don't always use those every day, but occasionally we need to remember what 7 times 6 is or what 9 times 3 is, and we pull it up. It's something we memorized. We have that on file. But this is talking about something else. This is talking about something that we should be thinking about consistently, each and every day, the law, the statutes, the judgments, the God's ethics, something that we need to consider all the time. It says to keep them in mind always. And to do this, it would be likened to remembering the eternal your God, because his laws are basically, that's how he lives. That's what he is like. This is based on God's character. And so when we remember these things, we are remembering God. And so with this in mind, is there a parallel scripture that we can think of, that we can go to next? How about Deuteronomy and chapter 6? Let's go back to the book of Deuteronomy, a book of the law, and chapter 6. For a very familiar scripture, most of you are probably thinking of where I am going here, Deuteronomy 6 and verse 6, where God said, "These are the words which I command you today. They shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up." In other words, things that are supposed to be kept in our mind always, to be considered in everything that we do. "You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes." And we're aware of what this expression means, what you put your strength to do, a sign on your hands, frontlets between your eyes here, where we process thought in the frontal lobes, the cerebral cortex. "You shall write them on your doorposts of your house and on your gates." And so he's talking about having them as a framework of our lives, of how we live, a protection, making our lives stable, if you will, the doorposts of our house. So the frontal lobes, the cerebral cortex, is the place where studies have shown this is where we process thought. This is where most of our critical thinking takes place. It is where we ponder, is where we consider. It's where, when we are told to do a certain task, we process thought and go, well, here's how I'm going to complete that. Here's how what needs to be done in order for that task to be completed appropriately. And this is the place where God tells us to not forget, to remember these things. Keep this in mind, because God knows that in good times and also in bad, we might tend to forget God. And more often than not, this is what people do, especially when times are good. And he talks about that next here in verse 10, where he says, "So it shall be when the eternal your God brings you into the land which he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and to Jacob, he made this promise, to give you large and beautiful cities which you did not build, houses full of good things which you did not fill, hewn out wells which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant. When you have eaten and are full, then beware, lest you forget the Eternal who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage." So God knew that this was not only a possibility for people to forget the Eternal their God, but that it was likely to occur. You know, the people of Israel were not the first people that God worked with. He worked with people before them, and he knew he was going to be working with many people after them. And we see that what Israel had experienced is something the nation of America is experiencing today, something that we have experienced and are experiencing today, this tendency to forget God. But it's not something that just kind of comes natural. It's actually a choice that people make. People actually choose to forget God. I have to say choosing, because this is more than simply being absent-minded, of being out of sight, out of mind. See, what began as sidelining God in the 60s has turned out to an all-out assault on God's name and on his values. There are scores of modern history books that are found in public education today and colleges that are now riddled with ellipses, the dot, dot, dot. And we know what that means when we're reading something. And we'll read something that says dot, 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 and it means something has been omitted, something has been taken out. Now, the purpose of an ellipsis used to be to take out something, well, it's not really pertinent to the point that I'm making, so we don't need to go through all of this other stuff. I'm trying to capture something here. I'm trying to give you what is important. But that is being abused today, enormously abused today, because there is a growing minority that do not want God and his ethics to be a part of American culture. And so people are rewriting history books, and I've seen it. I've read these. I've seen people talk about them. I've read them myself. Well, they don't want people to forget George Washington or Abraham Lincoln or some of the founders of this country, some people, men and women who have done great things, but they don't want people to recognize that these people believed in God, that they believed in the ethics of God. And so they'll quote them, and then they'll dot, dot, dot. They'll take out everything they say about duty toward God and reverence for God, and then we'll quote them some more, dot, 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 and they'll take out some more things about God. And it's happening left and right in this country and in many places in the world, because there is a growing number of people, still a minority, but a growing number that do not want God and his ethics to be a part of their public lives, a part of their business, a part of their private lives, and they want people to be like them. And so my question is, this is an intentional forgetfulness is what it is, but has it affected us to a degree? Has it had an effect on the Church of God? Let's go to James, the book of James, in the first chapter. When we examine our recent history in the wider Church of God, we will see that it has affected us in many ways, more ways than you and I would like to admit, I think. There is so much for people to get caught up in today, so many things that are a distraction to us. And this began a long time ago, maybe even after the Industrial Age is when it began, but it has greatly increased over the last 20, 30, 40 years, and particularly today in the electronic age, the digital age. I mean, social media alone could consume every waking moment of our lives if we allowed it to. And there are so many things to take care of today, so many responsibilities we might have or we have put ourselves in. So a lot of times we've put ourselves in these situations where we feel like, well, we don't have enough time for everything. We don't have enough time for God. You know, maybe even just to make ends meet. Sometimes people have to work more than a full-time job, and there seems like there's little left for anything else. And then we want to fill that with something that's gratifying, like entertainment or music or a hobby. Or, you know, none of those things are wrong in and of themselves, but it's how we use those things. And, of course, it's exactly what the content of those things are. If they're used in moderation and if they're family or age appropriate, there's nothing wrong with those things. But if we're not careful, though, in this electronic age that you and I live in, it could consume dozens of hours of our lives every single week to the point where we really don't have any time left for God. We don't have time left for meaningful prayer or thought or study or conversation with the people of God. So James, I think he relates to this to a degree, not that James could exactly relate to the digital age that you and I live in, but he said something that is actually timeless. He tells us in James chapter 1 and verse 21, he warns us to lay aside all filthiness and overflow of wickedness and receive with meekness the implanted word, which is able to save your souls, meaning to save your life. And then he said to be doers of the word and not hearers only. Don't just go to services each week and hear it and then go about the rest of the week not doing anything with what we learned. Not hearers only, deceiving yourselves, you know, claiming to be Christian, but are we really behaving as Christians? For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man observing his natural face in a mirror. He observes himself, and then he goes away and immediately forgets what kind of man he was, what he looked like. I don't remember what I look like. But if he looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it, and is not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this one, this man or woman, will be blessed in what they do. And so this is priceless information you and I have here, because people tend to forget, don't we? We do. We have a tendency to forget about those things. You know, children and teenagers, they forget how much their parents had done for them when they were younger and the sacrifices they made for them. We experience life. We see all the wonder in life, the things there are to enjoy, and this might cause us to overlook at times what people have done for us, including God, what God has done for us. Because as begotten children of God, you and I really have so much to be thankful for. And like children tend to take for granted what their parents had done for them, do we sometimes take for granted what God has done and is doing for us? I mean, think about it. Think about even just the things that we enjoy day to day, whether it be food or clothing or being able to drive to work or, you know, the relationship we might have. We really love that person. All of these things are directly related to God if we think about it. We have a lot to think about, and we can connect and or associate those things to God. And then, if and when we make a commitment to live morally, to live ethically according to God's standards, and we will start praying to Him, we'll reach out to Him, and He'll respond to us. And especially when we might find ourselves in a difficult situation, we'll pray to God and ask Him to help us out, to get us out of the situation or help us through it, and He can respond. Now, the response is not always yes, because there are sometimes situations where we need to experience something difficult in order to build us up. God is saying, you know, wait. I'm not going to answer right now, or at least the answer is not yes now, because you need to go through this. You need to learn something. I'm trying to make you stronger here. But God is paying attention to us, and we recognize that. But what I think we don't recognize all the time is that the more attention we give to Him, the more attention we are going to get from Him. Deuteronomy in chapter 8, should have had you put a ribbon there. Deuteronomy 8. Think for a moment about, well, what I might call the tepid believer. Someone we might call a professing Christian. We are kind of used to that term in the Church of God, because we are talking about people that are not a part of the body of the Church of God, who don't keep the commandments, who don't observe the holy days, but they believe in God. They believe in the God of the Bible. And even though they will admit that they believe, there's a lack of a true understanding of God's way, and with that in mind, a real commitment to God. But they might go about their lives thinking about God occasionally. Maybe they'll think about Him often, but not in the right way. But then when they're in trouble, when people are in trouble, even the unbeliever this happens to, when they're in trouble, they don't think about God all their lives, but then something happens and they're in a dire situation and they can't get God off of their mind. He is in the frontal lobes here of their mind as they, please God, please God, please God, help me out of this situation, help me through this situation. And if God chooses to bail them out, well, people in that situation won't be long before they're back to being lukewarm or forgetting God once again. But I want us to consider that, because we'd say, well, that's not like me. We don't do that. Or do we? Do we do it to a degree? Or in part, are we like this at times? Do we find ourselves remembering God, being diligent at times in prayer and in study? And we'll do it when there's something we want. We want God to do something for us. But then when we're satisfied, when we have what we desire, are satisfied with our living situation or our job, then we forget God. We're not as diligent anymore in our obedience toward Him. Well, this warning comes to us again in Deuteronomy 8. Deuteronomy 8 and verse 11, where it says, beware that you do not forget the Eternal your God by not keeping His commandments, His judgments, and His statutes, which I command you today. Again, lest when you have eaten and are full and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, And when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up, and you forget the Eternal, your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led you through the great and terrible wilderness in which were fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty land where there was no water, who brought water for you out of the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you to do you good in the end. And then you say in your heart, well, my power and my might, by my hand have I gained this wealth. And you should remember the Eternal, your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. And then it shall be, if by any means you forget the Eternal, your God, and follow other gods, and serve them, and worship them, I testify against you this day that you shall surely perish. As the nations which the Eternal destroys before you, so you shall perish, because you would not be obedient to the voice of the Eternal, your God. So God warned Israel about this. He warned them that this would happen if they chose to overlook him, to ignore him in their day-to-day lives, in their business, in their entertainment. And this is just like Adam and Eve, because God gave them the freedom to choose. He says, it's your choice, but here is the way you should choose. This is the way that you should walk. But he allows us this choice. And one of the choices that he allows mankind is to worship him in spirit and truth, or to fashion a God that is tolerant of the behavior that we might want to enjoy when it doesn't align with the scriptures. If our focus is power, if our focus is money, you know, we will design a God that's okay with us hurting others for our own benefit. If we want to illicit sex, if so homosexuality is your thing, well, you can throw God out entirely, or you can design a God that's okay with those things. Even making yourself a God in that regard. Because really, if people that say they're an atheist, they don't believe in any God, well, you're making yourself God is what it is. You're saying you are the judge, the moral judge, aren't you? So the human tendency, though, is to seek out a God that accepts what we want when what we want is evil. And this is an enduring message for people today, because America has experienced this to a large degree. I mean, we were once a nation that vastly revered God, that we were led by biblical principles, and those principles allowed us to design the longest-lasting democracy in world history. The greatest nation that has ever existed came from people who revered God. They weren't entirely on track. They didn't understand all of what God expected of us, but they had great moral standards. And they said, this is how people should live, by the laws that are found in the Bible. But eventually, people began to think, well, maybe it wasn't God that did all of this for us, that blessed this country, that gave us such wonderful things, that made us such an affluent society. Maybe it's our own strength, because people had to work hard. It doesn't mean God's going to make everything easy for us if we obey him. Still need to work hard. Maybe it was we did it of ourselves. It's human ingenuity that caused America to be great. And we saw in the late 1920s, 1929 to be exact, that America suffered a Great Depression, and this lasted until the late 1930s. And that depression affected not just America, but it affected much of the world. And there remains active debate as to what caused that terrible time in American and in world history. But during that time, there was a congressman by the name of Clyde Kelly, and he was asked for a reason that America had suffered such a great depression. And he replied this. He said, spiritual bankruptcy. We have been worshiping the golden calf, and the results are seen all around us. Senator Arthur Capper of Kansas, he said this. He said, had there been the universal acceptation of the principles of Christian justice and charity, there would today neither be economic nor spiritual depression. The world forgot Christ in the rush for money. The only God that many of us know seems to be the almighty dollar. And in answer to the question, how do you account for the state of affairs, the senator at that time said, there are too many dust-covered Bibles, prayerless homes, deserted churches, without even the semblance of a prayer meeting. As a businessman, as one whose privilege it has been to be a part in shaping the policies of our government, I say to you, the greatest need in the world today is a wider acceptance of and a greater devotion to the fundamentals of Christianity. That's what he thought caused the Great Depression and why it took so long to come out of it. How much more are those words true in America today? More than 100 years ago, Daniel Webster, one of America's greatest statesmen, he's uttered a warning. And this is a warning that's similar to the warnings that are found in the Bible. And he said this, he said, if we abide by the principles taught in the Bible, our country will go on prospering. But if we and our posterity neglect its instructions and authority, no man can tell how sudden a catastrophe may overwhelm us and bury all our glory in profound obscurity. And that is where we are headed. That is where America is headed. You see, people once gave God credit for the affluence of our nation. And then they began to think, well, it's a result of our own efforts. And so we're just going to seek things that we want instead of what God wants. And now we have come to a point where people think, well, it was all by chance that America became the great nation. Or some people are even saying it's because of evil, because America has always been evil, and that's how they got such success. And people today, even in this country, many people will say America was never great, never a great nation, and that we're no better than any other nation. Well, when we abandon the morals of God, that's true. We're no better than any other nation. And our affluence is waning today. It is. Our influence in the world is waning today. I mean, we were once a strong and powerful, a well-respected nation in the national community. A moral police, even of the world, going out of our way, giving thousands of our own lives, spending billions of dollars so that others would not have to suffer injustice. And we were respected by many for that, but not any longer. As Deuteronomy 8 and verse 19 says, it shall be if you by any means forget the eternal your God, verse 19, and follow other gods, even the God of self, and serve them and worship them, I testify to you this day that you shall surely perish. As the nations which the Eternal destroys before you, so you shall perish. So we need to ask ourselves, is this the beginning of the end? Is that what we're starting to see in the country today? You know, we have the weakest and most corrupt government in all of history right now. They're making decisions that are just plain foolish. And if you didn't understand that many of these decisions are on purpose because there are some people who want to bring down this country, you would say these people seem to have no education at all. We see that the current administration has purposely weakened the morale and the strength of our military. They are collapsing the economy. They are pouring tens of billions of dollars into other nations, many nations which actually hate us and would like to see us fall. And we have seen recently that they have armed to the teeth our greatest enemy, the Taliban. The people that we say were responsible for the worst atrocity, the worst terrorist attack in all of history, we have put in their laps tens of thousands of military vehicles and aircraft, hundreds of thousands of weapons and ammunition. We just said, here, have it. Just leave it there. Just walk away from it. Our fall is coming, and it is going to be the result of God removing his protection from America, but also it is the result of the evil from within. Proverbs chapter 30, Proverbs 30. Now those people who do believe in the God of the Bible, because there are still the majority of people in this nation claim to be Christian, even though much of the behavior of these people is not Christian-like or wouldn't be Christian according to our understanding of Christianity. And so the majority of the various sects and denominations of Christianity, they portray God as being tolerant of sin, tolerant of the behaviors that they want to enjoy. They paint a picture of forgiveness without real repentance, no real change in our lives. And the inclusion that is preached by the left has influenced the right to say that it's okay to partake of these pleasures of sin, because there's so much that we could experience in life. God wants us to be happy. He wants us to experience those things that make us happy. One musician sang a song about sin, excusing it away, saying that sin makes life livable, as if you couldn't live unless you're able to sin. And the result, therefore, we see in many of these denominations of Christianity is the worship of a God that is named in the Bible, but it is not the God of the Bible. Well, what about us? What about us? Have we been influenced by this to some degree? Have we allowed our lives to become so filled with things that we would like to do that we are at times choosing to forget something that is vitally important to our existence now and in the future? Could it be that we are ignoring God at times because there are other behaviors that we would like to enjoy? You know, do we even know what God thinks about some of the things that we do? Have we read about it? Are we asking God about it? Because it's okay to go to God and say, God, I'm not sure about this. If you could please help show me if this is okay or not, if this is appropriate, what should I do in this situation? And then sometimes the answer comes. Sometimes it comes through somebody we talk to. And many times it'll come through the scriptures, because if we're not reading them regularly, this is the manual for mankind right here. God did, he made it really rather easy on us to be able to have all the words. I mean, it's a lot of words. It's a lot to read, but we can get through it. And it's a wonderful thing to do. It's really fulfilling when we set our heart to it. So there are some other reasons why we might ignore God at times. You know, we might have a lot of on our plate, particularly if we have a family or a household to take care of, and we might feel like at times we don't have enough time for God. And it isn't difficult to do, of course, in a world that is becoming increasingly filled with so many distractions, if I'll put it that way, because I think a lot of the times these things are distractions. Yes, we have to work, and there are responsibilities we have in life. But then when we do have moments where we don't have to do something, what do we fill it with? Ask ourselves that. What are we thinking about? What's on our mind? In 1991, at Washington University in St. Louis, neuroscientists were exploring new technology. The technology was called positron emission tomography scanning, commonly known today as PET scans. Most of us are familiar with that term. And so what this type of imagery does is it examines blood flow in various parts of the body. And in this case, in the case of this study, they were looking at blood flow in the brain. So the subjects of the study were given various tasks that they were to do, and by examining where the brain is consuming most of the energy, the studies would therefore show where brain activity would take place during certain tasks. And I read an article about this past week, and I'm going to read you a bit of the article here, because I thought it very interesting and really pertinent to the point I'm making today. Because different regions of the brain vary widely in how much energy is consumed, the researchers needed to establish a study control baseline for comparison. That sounds easy enough. Simply put the subjects in a PET scanner and have them do nothing, what researchers would call a resting state, and then ask them to perform a task. It was assumed that the resting brain imagery would be very different than an active brain performing a task. What happened is that when researchers began scanning resting states and subjects were told to sit still and do nothing, the PET scans showed a distinct surge of mental energy in various regions. The result is that the resting state turned out to be more active in the brain than the activity state. After extensive review of the resting state, brain scientist Nancy Andreessen called this mode the REST, capital letters, it's an acronym, the rest state, standing for random episodic silent thought. What the PET scan revealed was that the human brain's resting state is a time when the brain does not rest. In many cases, it is when it is most active. Left to its own, the human brain does something amazing and unique to human beings. It travels through time. Now, this is not time travel in the sense of science fiction, like we might see in some of these fictional movies. It consists of a series of thoughts that take the person from one place to another. As we, you know, we might ponder the day's events, what happened to us last night, what happened last week, what's going to happen today, what's going to happen in the future, a meeting we might go to, a trip we're planning in the future. We might call it daydreaming or reflection, or some people would even call it meditation, deep thought even. So imagine you're sitting home on a sofa and you're not doing anything, you're just kind of staring at the wall, but then you start to think about something that you did last night and something you were planning on doing today and how that's connected to what you did last night and then something you're going to do next week. And you start making connections because these thoughts influence one another. And what has happened in our mind anyway is we've jumped backward and forward in time and we'll keep doing this. This article goes on to say, while doing this, we've built chains of cause and effect connecting those different moments. You've moved from actual events to imagined ones, and your body's emotional system has generated responses to each situation, even though we didn't move. So what this means is that when we are thinking like this, we're analyzing these things. You might call it mind wandering, but actually, in many cases, it's critical thinking is what we are doing. And we might consider how something could have turned out if we would have done something different and what we're going to do in the next time that happens. I'll be ready for it. I'll be prepared. What we're going to do next time. We're making plans for the future, you know, things that we might do if we were given the opportunity. The article asks, could it be that we have long underestimated the skill of what some might call downtime? Brain scientist Nancy Andreessen's study found out that when the brain thinks in a free and unencumbered fashion, it uses its most human and complex parts. And the studies led to another term coining the brain activity at this resting state. They call it the default mode or default network. Now, I'm not reading this to you insinuating that we should all just sit around and not do anything and let our brains wander more often. But controlled default mode or downtime. These are some things that we should do on occasion. Call it meditation. And it's something that very few people do anymore. When I say control, what I mean is taking the time to reflect on our lives, things we may have done, things we would like to do or are going to do in the future, meditating upon these things, the past, the present, and the future, and doing it with God in mind. Doing it with God's ethics in mind. You know, this is not so much random thought, but it is directed thought. The article says, it's now believed that the seemingly trivial activity of mind wandering plays a central role in the brain's deep learning as we sift through past experiences and we imagine future prospects. It is also believed that this default mode of the human brain could be the defining property of human intelligence, something that maybe we might call awareness. What some would call a type of consciousness that in the physical world is unique to human beings. Some organisms display behavior that have long-term consequences, and they compare a squirrel bearing a nut, and this is a behavior that has, they're preparing for the future, the winter, when they don't have any food, they can go dig that nut back up. But those are instinctive. Instinctive thoughts that anticipate future events are very different than human beings being able to make plans for coming months or years. What gives us the kind of creative power unique to mankind in all of its inventiveness may not rest upon the gift of language or opposable thumbs. It may include the ability to free our minds from the tyranny of the present. I think that was very well said. And this is according to an article written by Stephen Johnson. And when you think about it, when you think about all of the great inventions or achievements of mankind, it actually required this random, episodic, silent thought. It required it. The ability to consider the past, the present, and the future, and to consider the possibilities that we have. This is something that is unique to mankind, and it is a gift from God. The possibilities of what we might be able to attain given effort and thought. So today, this mind wandering or contemplation, critical thinking, if you will, I'll put that in there because I think it definitely is applicable. This is under attack. It is under attack. And most of us have something in our possession right now that is one of the weapons trying to attack this type of thought. The compulsive use of smartphones and computers is greatly hindering our ability to focus on what is truly important. And that is according to the article. That is something that they note in the article. They say having a supercomputer at your fingertips at all times of the day gives people too many other things to focus on so that they don't have time for this resting state of the brain. I call them distractions. Distractions from family, distractions from God. It takes away, they say, our rest time, something that is supposed to be our default mode. What used to be downtime between cognitively active tasks that would lead to these restful states of thought are now filled with Facebook, Instagram, stock updates, podcasts, videos, memes, TikTok, and the list could go on and on. Now, if anything, they say, what we need to do is take the time to think and consider where we have been and where we are going, or perhaps where we should be going. What will happen to our future and our ability to consider possibilities if we rely more and more on machines to think for us? It would be nice if this technology that led us to understand our roots would also take us back to our roots. And of course, in my mind, I'm thinking back to God. It's where we need to get back to. Get back to God. Revelation 3. This has affected all of us. All of us. I think very few it has not affected. Because we live in an age where the Church of God, particularly in America, has been the wealthiest it has ever seen in all of history. And much of what we have at our fingertips is a distraction, or can be a distraction. But, you know, people think that we're rich. People think we're increased with goods. And we deserve to have those things. We deserve to have Starbucks. We deserve to have our smartphones in our hands all through the day, all through the night. And this, we were warned about this. Warned about this. That's a nice gift that just came through the door. We are warned about this by Christ as he foresaw what would come at the end of the age, the last era of the Church of God. In verse 14 of chapter 3 in the book of Revelation, to the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write, "These things says the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I wish that you were cold or hot." In other words, lukewarm. "So then because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. And because you say, 'I am rich, I have become wealthy and have need of nothing,' and do not know that you are wretched, you're miserable, you're poor, you're blind and naked, I counsel you to buy for me gold refined in the fire, that you may be rich, and white garments, that you may be clothed, that the shame of your nakedness may not be revealed, and anoint your eyes with eye salve, that you may see. As many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. Therefore be zealous and repent." So there's a lot of symbolism going on in here in the things that God says. And this is a prophecy. It seems like he's talking about stuff, because we live in a nation where many people are rich and increased with goods. Oh, people think we don't have so much, but most people in the nation of America today have more than kings of ancient times. But there is more going on here than just stuff. It goes much deeper than that. It goes into the mind. the frontal lobes, the cerebral cortex, because many people in the Church of God in our age feel that they are spiritually well off, that we have a good understanding of these things. We know what we need to do. We don't need to study that much. We don't need to have in-depth prayer. We know what's going on. We see it. We have the Sabbath. We have the holy days. We're the good guys. We think we're rich. We think we're increased with goods in this way. We have everything at our fingertips, at the touch of a screen. At the same time, many people in the Church of God today are ignoring God. They're overlooking Him, putting Him aside, not in all things, but in a lot of things. Many people are lukewarm today in their attitude toward God, and it is leading to all kinds of problems. And we all know that there are many problems in the wider Church of God today. It's no secret. We all see it. The Laodicean era has affected every single one of us to a degree. So what can we do about it? What can we do about it? Let's go back to the book of Psalms, Psalm 103. Even further. The nature of humanity, as stated in the book of Ecclesiastes, is that the eye is not satisfied with the seeing, nor the ear filled with the hearing. And it's my belief that the reason the carnality of mankind is not satisfied with what we have in this world, no matter how much we might have, is because the spirit of man, which is a gift from God, it is unique to God's creation, a spirit that you and I have that helps us to understand the world around us, to be superior to every other living thing on this planet, and to be able to relate to God. That spirit can never be satisfied entirely with what this world can offer. So no matter how much we might have, no matter how much we might experience, we are never going to be entirely satisfied. I mean, do you look around us? Do we see a lot of satisfied people in this world? Even people that are extremely wealthy, are they satisfied? Vastly not. I mean, they bounce from marriage to marriage to marriage because they're not satisfied. Do we see a lot of people in the Church of God that are satisfied today? Are we? Are we content? Are we content with what we have or what we are doing? And if we're not content, beware. Be on guard, because there's something we might be forgetting. Are we forgetting something? Perhaps maybe something we're choosing to ignore. The discontent of many forces people to, or I shouldn't say force, it allows people to choose to look to the world for gratification. And then, when it comes to people that believe in God, we might look to the world and see something we want, and if it doesn't align with God's ethics, or, you know, we might begin to allow ourselves to become indifferent to that principle of God. And we do that so we can have that thing. I've heard people say that, you know, that they are stepping away for a little while from the church or from God. Why? Well, it's usually because there's something they want to do, and they're getting away from God, so I can do that. I can get away from that. And then after I do that, maybe I'll come back to God. It has happened. So they won't erase God entirely from their mind, but they'll choose to ignore those principles of God so that we can have that thing, something that we shouldn't. Most of us have so much in this society that we really take it for granted, I think, for the most part. But there are some people that we might know, even, that we would consider to be less fortunate. And even in the Church of God, we will see that there are some that, many of us, that might be living paycheck to paycheck, you know, not having anything left over at the end of the month, no savings, just kind of getting by, wondering if we'll have enough to pay our bills or our rent or mortgage. Some people have rough relationships that they are struggling with. Maybe we work at a job that we don't really like. We don't have any time for the things that the hobbies we might enjoy. Sometimes we might feel like that the dreams that we have are never going to come true. We're never going to be able to take that vacation or go to that place we wanted to visit. Could it be that some of us feel like, well, in order to get those things, we need to bend the rules a little bit. We need to step away from God a little bit, distance ourselves a little bit in order to get what we want. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't remove God from our thoughts. Notice what David concluded when he wrote this hymn, Psalm 103. In verse 1, he said, "Bless the eternal, O my soul, and all that is within me, bless his holy name. Bless the eternal, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits." Forget not all of God's benefits. And God's benefits can be seen throughout the world. But because there is so much in life, there is so much in this world, so much to be enjoyed, what we tend to do is we tend to focus on those things that we don't have, that we are not allowed to enjoy, instead of those things that we do have, that we can enjoy. So in order to remember God, this is something that we can do. Consider all of his benefits. Call it being thankful, if you will. Make a list. Write them down, those things that we have to be thankful for, the little things and the big things. Review that list if we need to. Bring it to mind. Don't be like Michelle did this morning, make a list of things not to forget and put it on the fridge and then forget to look at the list to remember. And sorry, I had to use that because on the way here, she told me the story about she forgot to check her list. But this is a different type of a list of things that we are to be grateful for, the many benefits that you and I have. We need to bring those things to mind, the positive things in our lives, bring them to mind and associate them to God. Give him credit where it's due. Associate them to him. And this leaves a positive impression in our mind of God. And it wants us to think about God more often because we all want to be more positive, don't we? I would like to be more positive. Think about God more. Think about all of his benefits. And when we do, we're less likely to overlook or ignore or forget him. Philippians 4, I think there was a good point I would like to make that the Apostle Paul made in the book of Philippians. You know, God didn't say that we were going to get everything we want in this life as long as we follow him. God only promised to give us everything we need in this life, need to survive in order to overcome this world. But this need often includes building us up. And so that may include having hard times, difficult situations, trials to experience. And when those times come, don't choose to overlook God and think that he's not there for us because we're suffering. You know, that might happen on occasion, but don't think that way because things did not go as we had hoped. Recall Paul's affliction. Paul was afflicted in more ways than most of us will ever experience. And there was a particular affliction that was never taken away from Paul. And Paul prayed about this. He said he prayed about it 3 times, and God chose not to take it away. Now, the Apostle Paul, he was groomed to be a Pharisee, a well-respected individual in that community who would have been well taken care of, highly esteemed in that society. Still, in all of his afflictions, Paul concluded that he learned that God's grace was sufficient. And what this means is that Paul would have to learn to live with it and still be graceful. In the book of Philippians, Paul said in chapter 4, verse 11, he said, "I've learned in whatever state I am in to be content." And then he says in verse 12, "I know how to be abased and I know how to be I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need." And he learned to live with it, to deal with it. Why? Because he says in verse 13, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." In other words, he understood that God was not going to forsake him. He would get through it. And he would end up being the better for it. And so he admonishes us to never overlook, never ignore, do not disregard God. And association is a way that we can do this, to keep things in mind, to make connections to all of God's benefits, on our, those things in our lives that we enjoy, that we attribute to him. You know, it could be food, clothing, work, relationships, our pet. Love my dog, Marbles. A wonderful dog. And I thank God for that dog. So we can think of God all throughout the day when we put our minds to it, and we can make these connections. It's really not very difficult. And it doesn't take a lot of thought. We don't have to spend hours contemplating, what am I going to think about? What am I, you know, we can put God in just about everything. You know, I remember having a conversation with my daughters years ago. We took a walk around the block, and I was talking to them about the things of God and the processes of his creation. And I said, you know what, you can name anything, and you can associate God to it. You just pick something. And they picked a few things, and we would think about it for a moment, and then we would, you know, talk about how that's related to God. Stop sign, even. You can do a stop sign. God didn't create the stop sign, but he made the elements that allowed us to create the stop sign. You can look at the stop sign and go, when sin comes along and it tempts you to sin, stop. Don't do that. So you can pick almost anything, and you can associate it to something positive about God. And then if we do this regularly, repetition, this is another way that we can keep God in mind, to make him a part of our daily routine. Now, we know we are to pray daily, but what are our prayers like? You know, are they really heartfelt? And we can say the same things over and over again, as long as we mean it. You know, we're not supposed to use vain repetition in prayer, but repetition is not wrong if it's not said in vain. Because a lot of times we do say the same things to God, but we mean it. We really do mean it. We can try paraphrasing, changing the words up a little, change the sentence structure a little bit, as long as it makes sense. You know, we can do it, do that. But my point is to make God a part of our daily routine, our daily lives, make him a part of our weekly education and study. You know, we have the greatest book ever written. There's no other book in the Bible, nothing like it. It is the only book in the entire world that you can read over and over and over again till the day you die, and you're still going to learn something new. And that shows us that this is a book inspired by God, because men cannot write books like that. There's no other book like the Bible. This is a gift from God. And when we repeatedly examine the book, it becomes important to us, an important part of our lives. We see that repetition is found in the holy days. We observe 5 holy days a year, 7 high days, but 5 holy days. And those are done repeatedly so that we continue to remember the aspects of God's plan. And if that were not enough, we have the Sabbath. We keep the Sabbath every week as a constant reminder. Oh, yeah, God. Oh, yeah, God. Next week, oh, yeah, God. Let's bring it back around. Let's come back to God, where our foundation here. So don't put God out of our minds. Remember what he is doing. Remember how he is working in us and with us and with other people as well. And that's something else we can do. Pray for other people. Talk to other people that love God. That can help us to remember him continually. Make God a part of our day and night by impression, by association, by repetition. Sincerity. In all of this, even if it's repetitive, sincerity in works, sincerity in words, even though they might be the same works or words over and over again. Don't forget the most important part of our lives, God. Jeff and Emily Baxter were planning a vacation of a lifetime. They had thought about this for years. They had made all kinds of plans. They were going to fly to Europe, and they were going to spend a month in Europe and go to various locations enjoying themselves, everything that they had dreamed of. And they wanted this vacation to be perfect. And so they saved up, and they said, you know what, we're going to bring all of the things that we want to enjoy on the trip. And so they packed suitcases and bags full of stuff, and they went to the airport. And as they were standing in line with their many bags and suitcases, Jeff looked at Emily and he said to her, "I wish I would have packed the lamp on the nightstand." And Emily looked at Jeff kind of puzzled and said, "Why? What would you need that for? I mean, look at all this luggage, all of these bags that we have." And Jeff looked at Emily and said, "Yes, but the tickets are next to the lamp on the nightstand." It's this human propensity that we have. We tend to forget sometimes the most important thing in our lives. We get caught up in the moment. We get caught up in all of the details and all of the distractions, and we sometimes forget the most important part of our lives. And so we might go through life believing that we have it all worked out. We know what we're doing. We got this. We're going to make it to the kingdom. We're going to be in the kingdom where we're so positive. But sometimes we might be missing the most important part of the journey of being connected to God, continually connected to God. The only way to get to the kingdom is through God. And so the next time we pause and we wonder, are we forgetting something? Could it be God? Could it be God and all of his benefits?
Thank you very much, Mr. Moore. Brethren, if you'll take your hymnal and turn to page 56, we'll sing, "Oh, how love I thy law," and mean